Episode 15, Numerology with Jeffrey Peckett.
Welcome to the Lightworker Podcast. I am your host, Natalie Ubel-Grant. I am a lightworker, a meditation facilitator, Reiki master, and a health and wellness enthusiast who thrives on helping people. Connection is my superpower, and I just love bringing people to a space where transformation can occur. Are you looking for information on being a lightworker? Are you a lightworker and just love collecting knowledge from other lightworkers? Then this is exactly where you need to be right now. Spirit has brought you here for a reason, and my hope is that this podcast will offer some new information and insights that will help you on your journey. I am here to help you connect and grow on your true path as a lightworker.
Welcome back to the Lightworker Podcast. Today I feel extremely grateful to share this amazingly wise soul sitting across from me with you all. We are sitting in the Budrum Health Food Store in Burnett Street, where you can find him every Thursday if you are looking for one of the most accurate numerology readings on the Sunny Coast. Also known as the Numbers Man and a show host on Noosa Radio, this man has a list of qualifications as long as my arm. He has studied and worked in the area of personal relationships and human potential for many years and has conducted workshops and seminars both nationally and internationally. Believing that all of life is a journey and along people's personal path, they can bounce from one experience to another, never really becoming aware of what it is that they are supposed to be learning about themselves and their ultimate potential. No matter who people are, how much money or how many possessions that they have, people are all heading for the same destination. However, the way they get to that destination is their own personal journey. He has written a book titled Reflections in Time, a product of his journey and the experiences that quite often altered his direction along the way. So welcome to the Lightworker Podcast, Jeffrey Peckett.
Thank you very much.
I'm so excited to have you here. I've been sort of stalking the health food store, seeing you here for I think about 6 months since I sort of started doing this podcast. And God, I wonder if you'll go on it.
Wow, so you're a stalker.
In the most kindest, nicest way.
Yes.
Yeah, so I thought, I wonder if you'll go on it, because I know that, and I've done a workshop with Jeffrey learning numerology, which was amazing, and hopefully I can organise another one in the future with him and get all you guys together and be able to come along and learn from his years of knowledge. I met him at this numerology workshop, and it was just a really great day. I learned so much about myself that day. I think the transformation that occurred probably has led me here. And I met you actually with a friend. She and her girlfriend used to do those get-together psychic development days where they'd get a bunch of numerologists, healers and different modalities together, and then they'd call in all their friends and say, you know, come and spend X amount of dollars and get to see three people and just have a taster.
That's right. That was at Nambour.
Nambour, that's right.
Yes,
I'm going. And when I got there, you were my first person that I got to see, and probably the only one that I needed to see that day.
Right. Yeah.
You know how that happens? And yes. I think it took you 5 minutes and you had me in tears. Which,
unfortunately, I've done that to quite a few people over my life.
But, I mean, in the healing work that I do, as soon as somebody bursts into tears, I sit and do a high five to myself.
That's right. Because you know that you've connected with them.
Yes.
That's right.
And you know that the healing has occurred.
That's right.
Shift is happened inside. Yeah. So, and I sat there and it was just came right out of the blue, and I thought, I just love this guy. I mean, once upon a time, I would have run screaming from healers that did that to me, you know,
Well, I didn't do anything. I gave you a space where you could connect with your heart, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and once that heart connection's made, It's the strongest connection you can ever have, and it never goes away.
No.
It's the most beautiful connection you can ever make.
Yeah. And that is the beauty of what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And without realizing it, you helped me to realize that I could do this.
Yeah.
What we're doing right now, speaking publicly on a podcast.
Yeah.
So pushing my scaredy cat nature.
Yeah.
And the usual thing that I used to do would be run and hide from all the things that scared me.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you need to jump into the things that scare you.
Well, the thing about things that scare you is that if you run away from them, they get stronger and they get bigger. Yes. And the only way to make sure they get smaller is to confront them.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And it is that simple.
Yeah. And there are two major fears. Two major seeds of fear. And one is self-doubt, and the other one's indecision.
Yeah.
And if you hang on to self-doubt or indecision long enough, you'll create fear.
Yeah. It's so true. Mm. And that fear ends up with, like, twisting itself around your brain, and you just have no way of knowing how to sort of run from it. So you can't run for it anymore.
That's right. It becomes very self-destructive.
Yeah. You get to the point where you just have to face it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where our unconscious mind comes in very strongly sometimes. Because if we run away from something long enough, our unconscious mind will make us stop.
Yes.
And confront it.
Yes, it will.
And sometimes it can mean that we're laid in a hospital bed, you know, having time to reflect on what we've been running away from.
Yeah. And how many times has that happened to people? Like, so many of my clients. Mm. They get themselves in all sorts of pickles. And then they realise while they're in that hospital bed, oh, I'm supposed to be learning about what's happening here.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is amazing then for them to have that aha moment finally.
And that aha moment is the one that opens everything up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's an awakening. It's the acknowledgement of that little light bulb that's gone on inside the brain that says, hey, there's more to all of this.
Yeah, there's a bigger picture.
There's a bigger picture, yeah.
Which I think you cover in your book, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So what I normally do on this podcast is I ask my attendees to share their story of awakening and how you got into doing what you do.
I don't think there's one sort of defining moment. I've known ever since I was little that there was something else, because I was born just after the war in England, and we lived in a prefabricated house, as a lot of people did back then, because there was, you know, a lot of the places had been bombed.
Yeah.
And down the back garden, we had this massive rhubarb patch. And I mean, these rhubarb sticks were 3-4 feet high.
Awesome.
With massive leaves. And I had big issues going on with my father, because he wanted a girl when I was born, and I wasn't the girl he wanted. So I got into all sorts of stuff, you know, with him. And when I wanted to get away from him and his anger, I used to go down and get inside this rhubarb patch. And that was my little... That was my little haven, my little safe place, yes. And I think it was the second or third time that I sort of secreted myself inside this rhubarb patch that I got visited by these little people. And I just couldn't believe it. It was an enormous, I mean, we call it an awakening, but it was just an enormous realization that there was something else there. There was something else out there. And I knew on some level that I had this intuitive ability, because I always knew when things were going to happen. You know, there was just that feeling there. And it wasn't until I was 18 years old and I was leaving home. I got a job away from home and I was leaving home. And my father had always poo-pooed anything to do with psychic abilities. But I was talking about something at this point, and he just looked at me and he said, you're just the same as your grandmother. She used to talk to people that weren't there. And then I realized that it was his mother that was psychic as well.
Awesome.
You know, my grandmother, and I, it just made so much sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, but when I got the numerological side of my studies started in my last year at school.
All right.
I had been almost bottom of the class in maths most of my school life. It was never a subject that I really got into. And in the last year of school, I got taken from my normal class and put with a group of other boys that had problems. And we were called the removed.
Oh.
Yes. And
they
They labelled us and they put us with this special teacher. Now, this special teacher took the first week out of all our studies and just sat with us and asked us questions. You know, like, where did you come from, and what was your date of birth, and where were you born, and all sorts of stuff. And I didn't realise back then what was going on. But at the end of that week, he said, we're going to build a model village. And he said, everybody is going to have their own job on this village. And he gave me the job of building the electricity pylons that went across the countryside back at the village. I wasn't too happy with that because I didn't think it was a really good job. But I asked him about it, and he said, my feeling is, you're the only one who can do it. He said, because it's a special job. He said, now, you've got to go to the electricity company. He said, you've got to get a blueprint for one of those big pylons. Then you've got to come back here, he said, and sit and calculate every piece of steel in that pylon down to 1/72nd scale. Then he said, you've got to cut your balsa wood up, build your pylons. Then he said, you need to get the topographical information from the council as to how far those pylons are apart across the countryside. Then he said, you've got to calculate that down to 1/72nd scale. Then he said, you put your pylons across the countryside. Result was that at the end of that year, I topped the class in maths.
Wow.
So I took a couple of days and I spoke to Mr. Stevenson, his name was, and I asked him what he'd done and how he'd done it and how he'd created so much of a change. And what he told me was that he'd used a process called numerology and also a process called birth pattern psychology.
Wow.
Now, with these two, he had got a personality analysis on all the kids, and he knew exactly where we were.
Yeah.
And he'd assessed that I had a line of practicality on the bottom of my numerological chart, which meant that I didn't learn anything by sitting watching somebody writing things on a blackboard. I learned by having my hands in it.
Yeah.
By doing it. So he gave me the most practical exercise that he could, and which I learned from. And from that point on, I was just wrapped in it. I was interested in it. So I've studied it ever since. And along the way, I've studied NLP and Gestalt therapy. I've become a clinical hypnotherapist. And I've become a rebirth trainer. I have a certificate in crystal healing. So with all of this therapeutic knowledge, I wrap it all up together into a very powerful therapy of being able to understand where a person is and then helping them to move and helping them to grow. So that's basically where I came from.
Awesome. So it was a teacher at school who shone a light in a direction that you could practically apply.
Yes.
Because you're a practical person, your skills.
Yeah.
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 It's amazing. Yeah. And then do it, because numerology is very practical. It's very, your numbers don't lie.
Well, they can't lie. It's mathematics.
Mathematics.
If they're not correct, then you've made a mistake somewhere.
Yeah. And how interesting, so that you were flunking maths and it turns out that you end up being the numbers man.
Yes.
Ironically. That's brilliant.
Hmm.
Brilliant. So you work out of here in the Budrum store, but where else are you?
Well, I'm here every Thursday.
Yeah.
And I can be here other days if somebody has a problem getting here on Thursdays.
Oh, yep.
I live down in, or up in Toowoomba.
Yep.
And I usually work from home. And if somebody is wanting a house visit, and I'll go and visit them at home. I've just, 2 weeks ago, I spent the weekend in Nanango doing numerology charts. I did 16 charts over the weekend.
Yeah.
It's very rewarding seeing people understand about themselves and seeing the light come on.
Yes.
Because you can see it. You can see there's this moment when their face lights up and you know that they've got it.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
That's the thing that keeps us going, I think. That fills, I know it fills my cup when I see the shift that happens in people and except
you've provided,
sort of point them in the right direction.
You've provided a space for them to find themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of it all.
Yeah.
Is that you can provide this safe space for somebody.
Yeah.
To find out who they really are and how beautiful a human being is.
Yeah. So do you read many books now?
Not a great deal now.
Yeah.
I have done in the past.
So what's your favourite book? What do you think sort of sticks out for you that's one of your favourites?
Look, I thought about that, and the one book that stuck out for me was a book I read in childhood.
Yeah.
And it was called Taka the Otter.
Okay.
And it's a book about a family of otters and this young otter. And in reality, it's a book about relationships from an animal point of view.
Yeah.
And it was the best book I ever read. Because I think that started me off at looking at relationships as well.
Yeah. Trying to understand.
Yeah.
I love that, the topic of relationships and communication between families, and I spend a lot of time with my kids on that subject of share more information, you know, give some more information. Don't just say no or stop it or, you know, give more information.
Give me a reason.
Give me a reason. Make me understand what it is that you really want rather than just blocking it and not saying anything else.
Yeah.
And I came from a family where I'm lucky. A lot of the time, explanation was given when you got told no to something, or you know, there was a reason for it. So it was really good. So that's what I'm trying to impart on the kids as well.
Yes.
But I find it funny because it's not innate.
No.
It's not something that just comes. It's something that you feel like you're saying all the time. The not wanting to be wrong happens so much.
Yes.
Especially in kids, they're just right in that.
See, the thing is that to accept that we're wrong, we have to confront our fear of rejection.
Yeah, which is huge,
isn't it? It's very huge. It is, because we're programmed with that fear of rejection so very early in our lives. It's as deep as our cellular structure, that fear of rejection.
It is.
And in some people, it can get very strong. And this is what leads to some people into committing suicide.
So what do you have an idea on where you think that fear of rejection kind of comes from, where the sort of, you know, possibly the starting point?
On a basic cellular level, it starts at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Because the egg from the mother is fertilized in the bottom of the fallopian tube inside the mother.
Yeah.
And from that point, it travels down into the womb. Now, In that uterus, it tries to attach itself to the side of the womb wall. And at that point, the mother's body sees it as a foreign object and tries to expel it. So on a cellular level, that's the point at which we feel our first rejection. And it's only the strongest eggs, the strongest life form, that gets to attach to that uterus wall and actually become an embryonic child.
It's just a brilliant analogy that we can so clearly see.
Mm.
Absolutely. And then for some people, once they're born, if they don't get that instant connection to mother.
Well, it's not so much the instant connection, because we're aware of where we are for the last 3 or 4 weeks of our pregnancy. We know we're inside another being. We know we have this sense of being. We have a sense that we are.
Yeah.
And we know, because we have a telepathic link with our mother, what is expected. So if we come into the world, let's say, like myself, I came into the world as a boy. My mother wanted a girl. My father wanted a girl.
Yeah.
So instantly, that fear of rejection because I wasn't what my father wanted became 10 times stronger than it normally is.
Yeah, and that's before you even come out.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But see, it tweaks then because we have this fear of rejection, because we know what our parents wanted.
Yeah.
In my case, my father. What we do then is we actually set out to prove that unconsciously.
Oh, and that is just
so we build
crazy
behavior patterns that get us validation and proof from our parent that how we feel about ourselves is correct.
Yeah.
So I used to get my father really, really angry, so he beat the crap out of me. And I got some proof that he really didn't want me.
Yeah.
You know? But the other side of that is that while he was beating me, I had his full attention.
Yeah.
He wasn't giving it to my brothers. So it works on two different levels.
Yeah, it was you were being validated and acknowledged in a very...
That's right. And I had self-validation,
yeah,
but also acknowledgement.
Oh, gosh, we're weird, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely.
We are so weird.
Mm.
That's why I love the way you talk about it, because I love the analogies that you use, so it's simple, so that, for me, and obviously my learning behaviours, I can understand what you're talking about straight away.
Too many people go on with philosophical arguments and stuff that's airy-fairy and you can't understand.
You can't.
The only way to have people understand it is to talk simply and to talk to the people that you're with.
Yes.
Not try and talk over them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I find that in the meditation group. I run it. But really they bring to the table what it is that we're, the topic that we need to acknowledge at the time, which I love that. And they all get something out of that. It's not me there preaching to them that this is what you need to learn today. It's none of that, which is amazing. So you said you met some little people in your rhubarb patch.
Yes.
Are you able to expand a little bit more on that? Because how old were you? First of all,
I was probably about 5 or 6 years old.
Years old. So can you describe them?
Look, they were just like little people.
Wow.
I can't say that they were fairies.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember them having wings.
Yeah.
Okay. They were just like little people. It took away my sense of fear because I felt that I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
If you can understand that.
Totally,
you know?
I understand.
And being a middle child, there are so many times where you do feel alone. You feel as though you're in a place of limbo.
Yeah.
Because your older sibling is getting everything, you know? And the younger one's getting all the attention.
Yeah.
And you're in this place in the middle. And you start to play games with your parents to get attention and to get acknowledgement. And you do,
so
you feel so alone sometimes.
So knowing that now and with all of your years of experience, what advice can you give to parents of children that have a middle child to help in those scenarios? Because we're all wanting to assist and help, and knowing that we've got this crazy brain that wants to validate
look,
what we feel is right.
Middle children are special, they're different, they're unusual, they will come up with very frustrating behavior patterns. And if a parent can understand that a lot of times what they're doing is to try and get the attention of the parent because they feel they don't get it. They feel they're always left out.
Yeah, that's perfect. So knowing that, have that knowledge so that the next time your middle child's acting up...
You know what's going on.
You know what's
going on. He just needs
your
attention. It just needs to be picked up and hugged.
Yeah.
That's all he needs.
Yeah. See, that's great advice.
Yeah.
Really great advice because, I mean, I know for me with my kids, I've got two kids, I spend a lot of time with the travel home from... from school is a great time for conversation and to get the lowdown on what's going on in their lives. And, you know, sometimes my eldest will kick the youngest as they're getting into the car, and that's when I realise, well, she's had a bad day.
Yes.
This has nothing to do with the youngest child and their relationship. There's something going on.
There's just frustration there. Yeah. There's something going on,
Something going on. And I can remember when I first realised that, and I just got out of the car, walked around and gave her a cuddle. And I said, are you okay? How's your day been? I mean, meanwhile, the youngest one screaming in the back, are you kidding me? And I said, I'll be there in a minute. But yeah, she just, something happened, and all the tears came out, and just holding that space and realising that piling more guilt on and getting angry and grumpy
would just make it worse.
It's just going to make it worse. That's right. Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, I think that we've made a leap consciously. There's definitely been a conscious leap for us humans in probably the last 10, 20 years?
Look, there's been a massive change in consciousness since the 2000s.
Yeah.
Simply because, numerologically, we lost numbers out of the dates of birth. Everybody that was born in the 1900s had nines on their charts.
Yeah.
Now there are very few people, except those born on the 19th or the 9th month or the 29th, that will have a nine on their charts. And nine is the number of completion. Nine is the number that gives us that feeling of completion. And you know, a lot of the kids don't have that anymore.
No.
However, what they do have is at least one and possibly two or three twos, which shows that since the year 2000, all the children that have come into the world have been very psychic and very intuitive. So they're working on a different level of consciousness to the one we worked on.
Absolutely. That's why I find that they are so much smarter than we are.
Absolutely.
So much smarter. There's so many times where they call you bluff.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, yeah, you're right.
That's right. Because they know.
Because they just already know it.
Exactly.
I sit there and think, gosh, how come I didn't get that? So now it's because I've got the nine.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And not enough
twos. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So having a little bit of knowledge about your numbers is...
It can give you an indication, an idea of your own behaviour patterns and why you do the things that you do, the reason behind your behaviours.
Which then, once you've got that self-insight, I always say to people, once you know, you can't unknow. So you can't keep lying to yourself and pretending that there's nothing you can do about it. You have to actually...
Well, you can never look at life the same again.
You can't.
Because you have a different awareness
of
everything that's happening.
What's your motto you live by?
I think the main motto I live by is that I can never take a person to a place where I don't want to go myself.
Yeah. Because you find that all healing, anyone that comes to you...
brings a part of me to look at.
Yes.
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 And I realised that many, many years ago.
Yeah.
That if I wanted to take a place into a person, into a very emotional place, then I had to be prepared to go to that place myself. And if it brought anything up for me, I had to deal with it.
I find that too.
So many therapists I've met shut off to their clients. They try and work with a client and they try and take them to emotional places, being closed off themselves.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
You can't do it. The really good therapists I find are the ones that have done the work themselves and continue to do it.
Yeah. There was a story that I heard many, many, many years ago about this priest. And he'd gone to this young couple who had a bereavement. And when he was with this young couple, they began crying, and he began crying too. And when he left there, he was talking to a friend, and he was saying that he felt he felt that he'd let them down because he couldn't do anything for them, and that all he did was cry. But the young couple were talking to their relatives a little later, and they were saying that this priest had supported them very much because he knew where they were, and he sat and cried with them, and they felt so supported.
And that's really all they needed.
That's right. That's right. So lots of times when we feel that, you know, we really need to do something, quite often we just need to be there. And we just need to hold somebody or just hold a hand or let them know that they are supported in what they're going through.
Yeah, that they're not alone.
That they're not alone. That's it.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. Us humans, we feel alone most of the time. Yet when you really, really look, we're not alone.
No.
We're surrounded by love.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And look, you know, ultimately you can never be alone because you've always got yourself there.
100%. And I mean, the more I've dived into healing work, the stronger that intuition connection becomes. And you realize that there's probably more than one voice in there. And really, in the beginning, you think, oh, wow, I'm going crazy here.
We have at least three voices.
Yeah.
We have a subconscious voice.
Yep.
We have an unconscious voice. And we have a conscious voice.
Yep. And all of them have a little natter in there.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And we very rarely get to talk to our subconscious, except when we're dreaming. And that's why...
meditation.
Yeah, that's why when I'm working with somebody, dreams are so important. Because the dreams a person has after they've done a process will tell you where they've gone and what they've worked on.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I often sit and chat about dreams with my girls because, you know, they'll have a nightmare or whatever. And after all I do is sit and have them recall it. And in some instances, like, we talk about the feelings and the emotions that it brings up. And then when they've been quite scary nightmares, you know, or call it a nightmare, we sit and change the characters.
Yeah.
And I find that that's a really healing way of helping them, because they'll be fine the next night and the night after, and it doesn't come back.
Dreams in themselves are very important because they allow our unconscious and subconscious to sort out things for us whilst our conscious is asleep. The problem is when you get a recurring dream that gets to a specific point and you never get beyond that point, and it just keeps repeating every night. That's at a point where the unconscious is unable to find a solution for it. And that's the time when you need to sit down and talk to somebody and actually go back into the dream and have a look at it and see what's really happening there.
You do that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, that would be so interesting. Mm. So do you take them with hypnotherapy and put them in?
Yeah. Just take them down into a very light trance.
Yep.
And then just regress them back into the dream. But then they become aware of everything else in the dream. Because usually when we're dreaming, we're only just a spectator. We're looking at something. But we don't see everything else that's around that point that we're looking at. So what I get them to do is to become aware of everything else that's in that dream. And to become aware of what their reason is that they're in the dream and where they are. Yeah. And quite often, they can come to that realization themselves that this is what's supposed to be happening, or this is what I'm supposed to do, or this is why I'm here.
Yeah, yeah. Because they're actually starting to see other things that they didn't see before.
That's right.
Yeah. Seeing the whole picture really makes a difference. I find that with the past life regression.
Yes.
And you do that too, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, because... it's just once they are in there and they're having a good look around, and then they sort of make that connection to what's happening in their life now.
Yes.
It's an amazing transformational process.
Look, the human being is amazing.
We are.
And it's amazing what we can actually do, you know, as human beings. And it's amazing the level of consciousness that we have, because... you know, I mean, we work on our conscious mind, and that's what usually keeps us going through the day. But our subconscious, our unconscious, has so much more ability. You know, I mean, you learn to drive, and you don't go down the road saying, oh, I've got to change first gear, and then second gear, and then third gear. It becomes unconsciously actioned.
Yeah.
You just do it without thinking about it. And at that point, your unconscious has taken over that role. It just has you doing the things that you've got to do, and your conscious attention is on the area in front of you, making sure that you don't crash into anything.
And it's amazing that that is true for a lot of stuff that we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of stuff. And we keep doing the same thing and expecting a different response.
Well, that's actually the definition of madness.
It is.
Of doing the same thing every time and expecting a different outcome.
I know in the beginning for me, it took me a while to sort of wake up to that, you know, to sort of realise, well, there's a pattern here. I'm the common denominator. So
it must start here.
So I must have to look at me, you know.
Where
before you sort of have that aha moment, you are in that position where you're blaming other people for all of your misgivings.
And the truth is that if you keep blaming somebody else, you give the power to that person for your life. And you can't change whatever it is until you take back that power and responsibility and say, I'm creating this.
Yes.
And at that point, you can change it.
Soon as you know. It's amazing.
Exactly.
It just takes a while sometimes. It took me a while, but it's okay. we all get there in the end.
We do get there in the end, yes. And sometimes, look, sometimes it takes a fair while.
Yes.
And I know there's a lot being said about domestic violence at the moment, you know. And I know several women who have kept going back into violent relationships. And they get to a point, you know, that they come and see you and they say, why am I doing this? You're doing it because you haven't seen the lesson in it all yet. You know, if you keep going back into a violent relationship, you're going in and punishing yourself, basically. You're going back for more punishment. So the question I ask is, how much punishment is enough? When do you realize that you've punished yourself enough? Sometimes it's a point where they say, I know I'm doing this myself. That point is the point where they've taken responsibility. And at that point, they can change it. They can make a change.
But it's just knowing that, because otherwise they just leave one and go to another. Yeah. Same traits in a different skin suit.
And the whole truth about domestic violence is that there are two levels of violence in any relationship. The male is very physical. So any reactive response from a male is usually physical. But the female is emotional. And a female usually uses emotional violence against the male, who becomes frustrated and then becomes physical. You know?
Yeah. In all of the relationships, there's two parties.
Exactly.
And the two parties need to accept responsibility for their roles.
100% each, yes.
100% each. And
yeah.
Often they don't want to or don't realise.
Well, it's better to blame somebody else for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you're doing this to me.
They haven't had that awakening where they keep giving their power away.
That's right.
Where they can actually sit there and change it if they want to.
Mm.
Yeah, which is... That's when the change and the life shift happens and you don't have to keep doing it.
That's when I stopped getting bullied at school. I was bullied through most of my school life because in a small village, there's only two schools, you know, primary school and secondary school. So you're with the same people, the same boys, same girls, right through your school life. So the bullies that I sort of got to know in primary school were there in secondary school too. And it wasn't until I was probably 14 or 15, this one guy was trying to stop me going home for lunch one day. And I'd had all of this bullying all my life, and I threw all of that anger down into my right fist. And he was on my left-hand side. And I swung my right fist, without even looking where it was going, I swung it around and I hit him fair and square in the face and broke his nose.
Oh dear.
At that point, my bullying stopped.
You took back your power?
Took back my power. I got six of the best because there was a teacher walking past at the time I did it.
And saw it.
But I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
And at that point, as I said, my bullying stopped because I took back the power and said, no more.
No more. And that you're willing to accept whatever consequences were going to occur.
Exactly. But see, that bullying was so tied up with where I was with my father as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was just incredible. And I think what all of my studies have done for me is to be able to accept and realize where I was as a child and learn to love my father the way he was.
Yes.
Not the way I wanted him to be.
Yeah, having an expectation.
Yeah. Because the one thing I wanted from my father was for him to pick me up and say he loved me as his son.
Yes.
And that's the one thing he was never able to do. But it's the one thing I blamed him for all of my life. Until, I think I was down in Melbourne some years ago, and I was doing a course down there. And I got into a lot of very deep emotional stuff. And I rang my father in England from where I was. And I said, "Dad, I love you." And all I got was, "Oh yes, that's nice." And then I realized my father couldn't say the word love. He'd never been able to. I'd never heard him tell my mother either. When I started to think back, And then I understood, you know, where he'd been and where I'd been. And,
yeah, you could understand him better because with the wisdom of years, we as adults can see things very differently to how we saw them when we were kids.
Well, your whole consciousness, your whole reasoning takes a hike, doesn't it? It changes.
Yeah, well, you see them as humans and with that they're also got their faults as well.
Exactly.
And that, you know, they're a product of their upbringing.
Yep.
And
when I learned about Dad, I mean, Dad's father died when Dad was 10 years old.
So he
never had his father there. Okay. So how could he had three boys. You know, how could he relate to us if he was never taught to relate to his father? So, yeah, there was a lot there. Once you start to understand where your parents are, you get an insight as to where you've come from and why you're the way you are. And, I mean, most of our parents now, I mean, okay, I was born just after the war, but my parents came through two wars.
Yeah, and that's big.
It is big.
Yeah.
So there was a lot going on there. And it's been a very enlightening journey thus far.
And finally, I would like to ask you, just to finish up, with an experience with spirit that led you to believe in its existence.
I think the main experience was back in 1972. I got electrocuted.
Really?
I had this big old soldering iron, this big old electric soldering iron that I used to use. And I was at a friend's place doing a job on my car. And I'd hooked up, I borrowed a lead from inside the house and hooked it all up, switched it on. And I went out to the car and picked up the soldering iron. And because it was so big and old, it took a long while to warm up. And I normally just put it into the palm of my hand just to make sure that it was getting warm.
Oh, gosh.
Now, the moment I did it, it grabbed me. And because it's a soldering iron, it had diodes inside it that rectified it from alternating current to direct current. So direct current doesn't throw you off, alternating current will.
So you grabbed it.
So I grabbed it and it grabbed me. Oh. And it was in my left hand and I was standing on grass in bare feet.
Oh.
I was perfectly earthed. And I was trying to pull the soldering iron out of my hand with the cord with my right hand and I just couldn't do it. And my muscles were all contracting. My heart had stopped. I couldn't breathe. And I was just standing there, and all I could feel was this energy surging through me in waves, just going down through my feet and into the ground. And within about 30, 40 seconds, my vision had gone down to this little tunnel in front of my eyes. I couldn't see anything else. It was just like this white tunnel in front of my eyes. And down the other end of the tunnel was a dark figure. It was just like somebody, like a shadow, like somebody was standing at the other side of the tunnel. But they weren't saying anything with a voice. It was in my mind. They were talking to me in my mind. And they were saying that everything was going to be all right, that it wasn't my time, that everything would be okay, and I wasn't to worry. And within about 10 seconds, the lady in the house saw what was happening, and she pulled the cord out of the socket in the house. And I fell flat on my face on the ground.
Oh my
God. And I remember this monstrous scream coming out of my body as I started breathing again. And then my heart started and I felt this warm surge all through my body as my blood started pumping again. And then I started to shake uncontrollably. They'd already called the doctor because I was on the floor shaking like mad. They dragged me up into the house. And when the doctor got there, he sort of had a look at me and checked my heart and everything. And he said, look, he said, I don't know why you're still here. He said, had you been anybody smaller, because I'm a pretty tall guy, he said, had you been smaller, he said, you would have been dead. Wow. He said, that's it. He said, I don't know how you got through that.
Wow.
So at that point, my life changed.
Yeah. Well, you've had the little people talking to you, and then you've got this ghostly or dark figure.
And that's how I know that there is something on the other side. There's something there. What it is, we won't find out until we get there. But I know there is something there. I've never been afraid of dying since that point.
Totally takes it away.
It does, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So we can get the full story in your Reflections in Time, can't we?
Yes. Yes.
And that's available at the moment on Amazon.
Yes, it is.
And you can get it in the Kindle. And then later this year, you'll have a new run of the hard covers, won't you?
Yes.
Or the hard copies, I mean.
Yeah.
Because I've got my name down for one of those.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to wrap it up here, Geoffrey. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Because we could talk for hours, I feel like.
I think so.
I love it. All right. Well, yeah, so everybody, if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave your comments and let us know what you thought, whether you got any insight from this information that we shared today. And all of the main points and notes will be in the show notes, so you can the links to how you can connect with Geoffrey and his book and all the rest of it. We'll see you again next week, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Head over to lightofwellness.com. That is www.lightofwellness.com now and sign up for my newsletter by joining the Light Tribe. I will keep you up to date with the latest info on upcoming episodes, workshops, meditation groups, and Reiki courses. I would also love if you have a chance to rate us on iTunes. Ratings means we are able to reach more people. Thank you again so much for joining me today. Have a great week. The content found within these podcasts are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. Nothing on this website is intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any physical or medical conditions. If you have any physical or medical conditions, you should seek the advice of your medical professional immediately.